The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, Confidants. Welcome back to another episode of Confidently Insecure, the podcast where we are absolutely sure we don't know everything. And I hope y'all got your coffee. I hope y'all are feeling hyped today because I am so excited to bring in this week's guest. Someone I actually met on the internet, I don't even know, like probably 2 years ago. And this is the first time we're actually meeting in person, which is like how we do as millennials these days. She is an author. She is an entrepreneur. She's got a story and a conversation to be had that I don't think we've had something this important talked about in a very long time. So I'm so excited to introduce her. Hi, Nadia Okamoto.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to have you on. So I actually have your book right here, Period Power, a manifesto for the menstrual movement, because I love the way your book looks. Like, it is such a coffee table, like, gorge in your fucking face book.
Thank you.
You did that on purpose, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, Simon & Schuster really killed it with the book design.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So, I totally did not celebrate this because I didn't recognize it, but 2 days ago was the 2-year anniversary of it coming out.
Happy birthday, Period Power.
Exactly.
So that's how I found out about you, was that you started this movement. You have been like kind of in the period activism for quite some time. And, you know, when we reached out to have you on the podcast a while ago, you were kind of going through like the biggest change and like scandal / mental health rehabilitation. Like, you were, as the kids say, going motherfucking through it. And I just think it's so bold and cool of you to just have like an honest fucking conversation. I should also mention you're 22 and yes, the shit that you have done in your life, I mean, that you've been recognized for, like just some of your accolades, right? Like, you were one of Glamour's Women of the Year. You were on Forbes 30 Under 30. You had a L'Oreal Women of Worth Award. Like, I think you won every award for being a woman before the age of 22. Like, does that resonate for you? Like, does that even settle?
No. And I mean, I think we'll get into it with the mental health thing, but I think that like a lot of what I've been grappling with is kind of overcoming this like addiction to work and like not knowing who I am outside of work. And so what's interesting is I think that I get this question a lot, which is like, how does it feel to have done all this stuff?
And you're like shit. I feel like shit.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of this like weird imposter syndrome thing. And I always feel like I kind of sound like an ungrateful person, but because I'm just like, I mean, fine. Like, it's just kind of that, like,
yeah,
it's almost like what you know, coming from trauma, you're like, oh, this is what I want to do. I'm ambitious. But then once you have it, you're like, oh, I don't deserve this. Like, this is not for me. Like, something is wrong.
Well, there's a lot of layers to it. Like, you talk a lot in your book about sort of your upbringing and, like, you mentioned the trauma that is outside of everyone's regular childhood trauma. Like, I always joke, I'm like, everyone had a traumatic childhood, but like, you went through some fucking shit that you talk about in the book. And then you had this like wild success, fucking, like you said, obsession with work and like really powerful, high standard of work. Like, you really held yourself to a measure of success that I don't know like anyone your age that can do. And as you've become more successful, like comes more problems, and you've been more open about your struggles and things. Like, there's so many layers to the type of fucking trauma you've been through. And then on top of that, to have sort of like this moment of like cancel culture happen to you earlier this year with your company. Like, can you tell the audience a little bit about the year that is 2020?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'll preface this all to say that, like, I think that I'm coming into this conversation, like, not as a, oh, I went and did the work and now I'm all better and everything is fine. And I feel like that's what I honestly love about your work and your platform is, like, I think the conversation that needs to be had is, like, let's get role models who haven't, like, gone through it and are all done, but, like, have role models and people who are open and saying, like, I'm a fucking mess right now. I'm working on it, and I am surrounding myself with people who make sure I'm working on it. So that's kind of where I am with that.
Absolutely. Thank you for saying that.
2020 has been a shit show for everyone, like the whole world, global pandemic. So my sort of small story in this sort of whole crazy year is, you know, I've been working for the last 6 years since I was 16 in this activist space of trying to end period poverty and period stigma. I started this nonprofit when I was 16 and it scaled very quickly. Like, we grew into, you know, distributing millions of period products, people and me. I wrote the book and then, like, you know, there was a lot of visibility in social media as youth activism, quote unquote, becomes this glorified thing on social media. Right. And at the same time, like, you know, I built like this chapter network with our team that, you know, grew to, by the time I was done as executive director, about 900 chapters registered in all 50 states and 50
and
countries.
And what's a chapter, just in case anyone who like doesn't come from a sorority background like me? I mean, it's not the same, but like, I was like, what the fuck is a chapter?
A chapter was basically, I mean, the concept at the beginning was just like, how do we build toolkits and just hand them to young people on the ground? So we weren't just asking people like, oh, share on social media. But we're like, if you want to get involved, like, start this organization in your area, right? And so it was kind of just a bringing the commission of the organization to life on the ground. And I mean, I think for me, you know, there's a lot of sort of leading from a lot of trauma, which is where I think I ended up and kind of where I was. But like, I was very heads down working on this, doing high school, doing all these other things. And then in, I stepped down from executive director in January. Mm-hmm. So we did a national search, you know, kind of replaced myself, but I stayed on in an advocacy role. Yeah. And then in June, other activists in the space started coming forward and sharing their stories of feeling silenced or harmed by my work. And I think these accounts of how did Nadia and like, to sort of try to monopolize.
That's a big word. Right. Like, if you just were to Google, sorry to cut you off, but like, just update listeners on like the current situation, or I guess a few months ago, like monopolizing on a movement would kind of be like equivocal to, you know, what would you say, like, if Black Lives Matter belonged to one person? It was like, no, we're trying to create like Black Lives Matter movements in all spaces. But what was nuanced about your creation was that the women that were coming forward were women of color, Black women specifically. I mean, you're a woman of color yourself, but that it fed into the idea that like, we don't give Black women credit where credit's due pretty much anywhere in fucking society.
Totally.
And that they felt silenced by another woman of color, which is a tricky fucking subject. Like, it is tricky, right? It's like levels of oppression come into play, and like, who is wrong? And again, like, I think the cancel culture that we bring to a conversation like that isn't helpful. And I think what's positive about the situation that happened with you is like, I think those women who came forward knew that cancel culture is not like something that's going to solve this. Like, saying like, fuck that chick, we feel this way, we're canceling it. It's like, no, there was a whole, like, there's, like you said, 900 other chapters of this really important movement involved. Yeah. And we can't really like place blame on one person. Like, I don't know. How do you feel?
I mean, so I'll say, like, when it was first happening, it was a lot of like shock. Like, because a lot of the people who came forward, like I've interacted with years ago, I hadn't really heard this before at all. And so when it started coming, I think it was kind of a, like, I just kind of froze. And I have not taken a break in the last 6 years. And so it was sort of this like, oh my God, don't move. Like, but then not knowing what to do with myself.
Right.
But I took it very seriously. And I think that, like, for the, you know, the people who specifically came forward, like, I think now I have, at the beginning, I did not feel this way, but right now I sort of am grateful for it because this is sort of, it thrusts me into a journey of like necessary learning and healing my own shit, like that I really have needed for a long time.
Right.
But so basically, like, you know, in hearing, you know, all of this of like, sort of the conversations around what does it look like to take up too much space in a social movement, right?
So
what does it look like to, because I did not create this movement. Like, I'm not the first one who realized, oh, people menstruate. Like,
you're not? I'm the face of period.
And I think that that's what was hard about what it was like. And I think this is a big realization of, regardless of what my intentions were, this was something that people felt silenced by. And that was what I really had to acknowledge was, no matter, I cannot say like, oh, I didn't mean to. The reality is that journalists and social media, you know, I mean, you've been written about, like, journalists will write the headline that will get clicks. And so that headline was, Nadia Okamoto, young woman, like 18-year-old, leads menstrual movement, right? You know, found.
And you're like, they gave that to me. Well, I've been dubbed the face of period.
And I think that where I should have been more aware was like stepping in and saying, like, no.
This isn't true.
Yeah, this isn't true. And also I think that something it really pushed me to do is like, how do I show up into each space and be thinking about all the other people I can bring up, right?
Wow.
Because that was something with like, with growing the organization, I cared so deeply about chapters. Like, I'm still in contact with a lot of them. Like, I would fucking die for a lot of them. Like, I love these, like, these sort of like younger sisters I have that I work with. And I think that was one of the most personally hard things for me was like getting on calls with all of them and feeling how much they were upset with me and how disappointed and how let down they were. And a lot of them just stepped out of the period space and are not doing the actives anymore.
Wow.
Like, that was the hardest thing for me. But I think that like, I had maybe blindly been like, oh, well, like I'm creating something that's making all these people feel empowered. So like
what's the problem?
And I think that what this was, which is so important, was kind of getting me out of that mindset and saying, no, it's not just about bringing those people up. It's also about bringing them to the table with you.
Yeah.
But not only that, but reaching out outside of the network, outside of like what is actually my brand. So there was a lot there. And I think for
that's
me,
that's a lot to take in as a 22 year. Also, like, I didn't want to stop your what you were saying, but like, I have to imagine a knee jerk reaction to being called out like that publicly when you feel like you haven't heard that would be an emotional reaction. And like, I don't think I would do very well in that situation, right? Because like you said, it's like no matter what your intention was, it doesn't matter. The intention doesn't matter because this is how people feel. And you have to, you know, apologize, but also the apologize is never going to be right for everyone, right? Like, it's going to feel performative to some people. It's going to feel PR'd. Like, it's so nuanced when you're a public figure. Like, how do I apologize and make everyone happy? And the reality is, like, you're not going to make everyone happy.
Yeah.
And also giving yourself space to still notice that your come up was a dream for a lot of people. Like, when you're at that age and you're trying to make a name for yourself and you got as much success as you did, like, whether or not you labeled yourself as these things or journalists and L'Oreal and Glamour labeled you them, it's still, you're still at that time in your life where you are trying to make something of yourself and your brand.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that, I mean, yeah, it was hard for me, but I think like the sort of stories that came from other active menstrual justice activists, like, I really took fucking seriously. Like, those are the ones I read over and over and over again. I think what was hard mental health wise was wrapped in in that was also a lot of sort of feedback that there was a feeling that I had not lied, but like exaggerated about my past experience with homelessness. Right.
Right. Because that's a big part of, you know, period poverty.
Well, and when I started this organization, my family was, we were just coming out of a situation where we were having to live with friends to make ends meet. And like, you know, financial instability and housing instability was like a big formative experience for me. But when all this started happening, you know, Twitter, it started as like, you know, it was an exaggeration. It was really housing instability, not homelessness. And then there was the fighting of, but that's the federal definition and not. But then where I think it got hard was then seeing the like, the sort of these made up stories like, oh, my mom's actually a millionaire and she hired a publicist to like do this.
Oh, fuck. And people said that.
And then I was getting DMs saying like, prove you're on financial aid. Prove like, why did you have the Gates Millennium Scholarship? Why did you get all these scholarships for like poor kids or like low income kids when you were actually a millionaire? And it was like, well, I'm not a millionaire. Like, it became this whole sort of that. And then it became like, I remember like going into the depths of Twitter and finding these comments saying like, she lied about being raped. She lied about domestic violence, all of these things to appropriate trauma. And and so I would say that like, it was such a great, it was not a great experience, but like, it was a necessary experience to like hold me accountable for some things, but it was the microcosm of that coupled with the like, you know, every nightmare of a survivor. It was like, you're lying.
Not being told.
Prove it. Show the papers. Show this. Where are the witnesses? That I just like.
And that coming from woke, I say in quotes, people feel so fucked up because I think that like ties into it a little bit too, is like what I've noticed as I'm fucking guilty. And I think it's specifically with white women because we're the fucking worst, is like we always want to one up someone in oppression, or we want to one up someone in being more woke. It's like we just want to be able to put down another woman to be like, but see, because I know how to do it right. And it's like, well, no, you're doing exactly the thing that, you know, the right wing trolls are doing, right? You're invalidating the experience completely. You're pushing women further apart, frankly. And I think to your point about like some of it being necessary, I think it also ties into like another woman of color being called out by black women. Like there really is that space that needs to happen, right? Like it can't just be white versus every other woman of color, because that, I mean, that is definitely white women's job to recognize, but that racial sort of injustice needs to be called out. Right. And I think for to your point of like some of it being valid, I think that's where it was probably helpful for you, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, I mean, so I started like in June. So this all happens at the beginning of June. Like this starts coming out. There's like, you know, and I think that the hardest thing for me is like, I just felt so alone because people who did really want to cancel were like DMing my family, all my friends. And so I felt like I can't reach out to anyone. No one was really reaching out to me. And then a lot of mutual friends that we have who are also in the feminist space, who I've known for years, were posting about me publicly, but then in my DMs with hearts and messages saying like, oh, we don't actually, you know, this is not what we think. We just have to do it. We have to participate. And it was a lot of like,
wow, what the fuck?
And it was like not knowing who to trust. And it was like, so it was all of these things together of like knowing that a huge piece of this in this space is something that I should and absolutely need to be held accountable for.
Right.
And then a lot of it was like triggering. And then, so it was things where all my PTSD came back, all my depression. And literally within days, I was not pooping. I was not eating. I was not sleeping. I was like,
shut down.
Body completely shut down. Like did not poop for 2 weeks and then was throwing up because I like my
girl,
body.
You got to poop.
I know. And then it was like, I wasn't sleeping. And then I would wake up and have 3-hour panic attacks. So then a few weeks later in early June, I was admitted into a trauma rehab facility. Residential. And so
congrats. Did you get the sweatpants? We all have the sweatpants, right? What does that look like? Because so I feel like some people think you're like wheeled in on a stretcher with your like wrist tied. I was like driven in a black SUV through like the hills of California to my place. I was like, oh, wait, this is like, I feel like a celebrity going to rehab. Like it's not you know.
I mean, I think that this is where like the summer of like all the mental health support, I was like, because I struggled with suicidal ideation when I was really young in high school. And like, that's exactly where I ended up without work. Right.
Wow.
And so I really had to be like, cause I mean, I started my organization when I was in a really dark mental health state and completely found my self-worth, completely found like happiness in my work.
Wow. But, that so can when be that dangerous
was,
though.
Yeah. When that was taken away, I was like, who the fuck am I?
You have
what
no identity.
Am I worth? Like no identity whatsoever. And then also thinking, well, the identity I thought I had is harmful and not what I want to be. Right. So, but this summer I have been so, so grateful. And I think recognize a lot of privilege and continue every day of like the fact that I was able to go to rehab. Like wow, the fact that, and honestly, that was one thing I had a hard time with other patients who were like, I'm so ashamed to be here, which is a whole other thing we have to deal with. Mm. Like, there's a lot of shame of being there, or like, I hate being here. Like, people are forced to be there. And I was like, do you know how much of a blessing it is to be here?
Did you self-admit? Were you like, I'll go willingly?
Well, so at first it was kind of brought up to me by my friends and family who are like, we're worried about you. Like, you know, this guy had just started dating. We ended up quarantined together. Like, I think he was not then like running this administering, getting me like 5 different types of laxatives a day. He was asking me what I would want to eat. And I was just so scared to make any decisions. I couldn't.
You were paralyzed. Yeah.
Yeah. Paralyzed. I was like, well, I don't eat that. And I don't eat that. I actually just don't want
to
eat.
And like, you need someone to just take care of you at that moment.
Yeah.
Make decisions for you.
So I think it's a mix of both of like everyone in my life being like, you need to go. I had also jumped into startup mode in January. So like I had left my positions and was like, go. And it was like everyone. It was like, if I'm going to be at the top of my game for investors, for, you know, my team members, like this is not, I
you
cannot
have to
be
get right. And like there's building that, like you said, like beyond the business part of it, because part of your recovery has to be separating yourself out of the business part of it. And like, dealing kind of with every millennial woman's worst nightmare, which is like being publicly shamed. Did you read that book? So you've been publicly shamed?
Yes.
I was going to say, I have it because I know it's going to happen. I'm just like waiting. I'm like, all right, when's my time? I'm going to fuck up. And learning about like taking the L's and moving on, right? But then how do you bounce back from that? And the fact that you're like, you know, not drooling in the side of your like house right now is pretty incredible. Like, do you equate that to like your insane work ethic? Like, I need to be better. Or did you allow yourself to really hit rock bottom? Just a traumatic question.
I think that like when I went to rehab, I was like in pretty rock bottom. Like I was, it was just like who I am now with energy. I was like, no energy. It's like whisper. Like I am so loud and like, I'm just a loud fucking person.
Same.
And I like, I just got diagnosed with ADHD too, which is like a whole new thing. And like, but in that moment, like before I went, I was just a shell. I was talking, like not really moving.
Yeah.
And so I think I felt kind of rock bottom a little bit there. And like, I think that it took me a few weeks to really give into the process. I was only supposed to be there for 4 weeks. And then at the end of the 4 weeks, I was like, I'm not ready. Like I cannot.
Wow.
Well, I extended, but like, you know, yeah. I mean, I think that it took a little bit. And then there was a day there, I remember, that I'll never forget, where I just completely, like, you know, when you have that cry where you like can't breathe.
Yeah. And you're just like a fucking snot and water coming out of every hole and everything's all swollen.
Yes. Like my eyes were completely swollen, like everything. And I just like, but I think that was a really big turning point. And then I started feeling a lot better. And I'll say like, so I did rehab and you know, it's intense, like 12 hours a day, like
all day therapy.
All day. But on top of that, before I went to rehab, I actually like brought on like a team of accountability coaches, like helping, you know, people who do get called out for these things to say, okay, how do we actually like teach you like what you did wrong and what are the beliefs inside you that you need to fix? So I brought this team on. And so I've been meeting with them multiple times a week, like still today. And like, I did this full, like,
how do you find people like that? Like, how do you find that?
I found it, but I just, like, it's been really incredible. And it kind of goes back to what you're saying about women of color who are not Black and what is our role in racial justice too, because through that, like, they came to me and they were like, here are white supremacy values and how your perfectionism is a symptom of white supremacy. Like, these things that I had never heard of before. Right. And these elements of, you know, the model minority myth of being Asian American. And
wait, what's that? Slow down. The model minority myth of being Asian American. Tell me.
So the model minority myth is sort of the idea that, like, the assumptions and stereotypes around Asian Americans mm-hmm. are like being the smart, wealthy minority who made it, right? Like, it's actually completely, and this is what I learned through this process, is like, it's a completely, like, white media created phenomenon where mm-hmm. like, you know, they, first of all, there was the Chinese Exclusion Act. They were like, all Japanese people were like banned from, Japanese and Chinese, like banned from immigrating to the US.
Fucking
and,
crazy.
Like, Chinese people were the first, like, undocumented immigrants
right,
here.
Right.
Exactly. And, but basically what happens is then the legislation in mid 20th century starts allowing in, like, the engineers, like, they're kind of really
cherry
smart.
Cherry picking.
Cherry picking. And then it ends up on, like, magazines of white media, like Time Magazine, of, like, Asian students, like, how they excel at math and all of these things. Mm. And so cut to today, like, Asians are kind of put in this sort of, like, oh, they're fine. Like, they're the minority that kind of made it.
Created it being like, this is the closest to white is smart Asian. And it still creates this supremacist value of, like, but you're never going to be white.
But it's also this kind of, like, well, first of all, I think what I've really actually become obsessed with this, well, the term Asian American in and of itself, and trying to lump, like, 40 different ethnicities into one, of, like, there is so much a lack of representation for, like, Pacific Islanders and all the other types of, like we, I think in this country, like, I'm half Japanese and half Chinese. Like, I feel represented on the Chinese side and the Japanese side. And that's where I have privilege in that. Right.
Right.
But what about all the other, like, Asia's a huge fucking continent. So it was that, but also acknowledging that the model minority myth is rooted in anti-Blackness, right?
Ooh,
so,
go on. Yeah.
So, like, basically by creating a model minority myth, it's essentially creating, like, a good minority, but then which immediately shares that then there's, like, a bad minority, right? And so there's, and then it also, like, I'm actually taking a class at Harvard right now. I'm such a nerd about this, but, like.
Yeah, we forgot to mention that you go to Harvard. Okay.
I've been taking this class. I've been talking this class about, like, meritocracy, and I've been really obsessed with it because basically, you know, and it's a whole concept of privilege and policy now, is this idea that, oh, well, Asians, like, became this sort of successful group because they worked hard, right? Like, I got teased my whole upbringing from other white people in my classes of, like, oh, you try hard, you're so fucking good at math, oh, you get straight A's, right? Like, that kind of
and
teasing.
And it's because you're Asian.
Yeah, and it's because I'm Asian and, you know, nerdy as I am, it was true. But, like,
it's,
but,
like, you say that like it's a bad thing, you fucking F students.
But it's kind of the idea that, okay, well, if they made it like mobility wise out of hard work, then that means other people who have not done that, they're just not working hard enough. Right.
It's which is bad minority.
Which is a crazy problematic issue with, like, why we're still fighting for social welfare programs. Like, but so this is a kind of an example of, like, I think when I went into rehab, I brought on this group because I honestly didn't know how to understand everything. I was like, I don't know which people I should be thinking, okay, this is what real, because I lost all confidence. So then I was like, oh, like, did I lie about being raped? Like, was that actually something I invited? Right.
Wow.
Like, oh, like I questioned everything.
And
right?
how did you navigate through those thoughts?
I mean, I obviously didn't. I was just spiraling down in rehab, and it was a lot. And I mean, while in rehab, it was a lot of neuropsych testing and learning, like,
what
you
kind
know,
did you do, like, neurofeedback or like?
Just like, it was just like 6 hours of like the questions and like,
oh,
do
I
you see.
Pay
attention. But then it was, and it was also like people that, like, everyone just watching you and.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I, like I going into it, I was like, oh, like I have anxiety and PTSD and depression, right? But coming out of it, it was like, oh, I have complex PTSD with dissociation and depersonalization, which is like really kind of the craziest of like you remove yourself.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Very familiar.
Yeah. So it's like a lot of complex PTSD and then learning about personality disorders and learning about all of these, like, oh, it's a part of my fucking trauma that I have no sense of identity, that I am like, so it was really,
and how do
really
you not good. Fall into like a victim mentality, right? Because I can see it from both sides, right? It's like the same way we never, ever, as white people, the white supremacists never gave room for Black people to be successful in America from day one. They have kept them down, right? And it's like, okay, well, then we've kind of opened these little spaces for Asian Americans, or, you know, the broad term, to bring them in. And it's like, we still never gave space for people to feel like they were treated the same way as white people in this world. So it's like, I could see a bit of victim mentality of like, that's valid in that, right? That like you are afforded certain privileges that other minority groups might not be. But then you've also had these fucking tough things in your life happen to you that I say like are outside of traditional childhood trauma that could put someone in a position to not do the work, because it does feel like, no, I deserve to be fucked up or sad or spiraling because of these things that have happened to me. And so I guess, is it something you've thought about in rehab or outside of rehab now of like, how do you avoid the victimhood mentality?
I mean, I think that like I was in a really unique position where like my career, like I was on like speaking tour before COVID hit. Like my career is getting on stages and being like, I was sexually abused by my dad. Like this is shit that I went through, mental health, everything. And like, I would stand on stages and say, I'm still depressed. Like my mental health is still something I'm working on. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know the extent of how my mental health was. And there were like weeks while in rehab where I was like, I'm never getting out of this. Like I am so fucked up. I am not able. And like, I still today, like I had, you know, it comes up in every, like last week I had this moment seeing like, you know, pushback is still out there. Of course, like it's still being discussed, like where I was just like,
it's not linear. There's not like a destination that this is over. Yeah.
Yeah. And I still have those moments where I do feel like I kind of fall into this, not victim mentality. I don't feel like wronged by the world. I more just feel like hopeless. Right. And so like, you get dramatic about it. So like my boyfriend tries to snuggle me and I'm like, I don't deserve cuddles.
Oh,
like,
you know, God.
Like, it just gets so dark. But I mean, I think that honestly, because I was in that unique position where like, I've always looked at it like, yeah, I was sexually assaulted. I've gone through some things, like, you know, everyone has their own trauma. And I think it's never like trauma versus trauma.
Right.
But like, yeah, I've gone through trauma, but like that trauma has also given me so much strength and so much community. Right. Like my best, the friends that I connect with the most are other survivors. Right. The people who understand me the most are other people who have like this manic work energy. Right. And like do you know what I mean? So it's kind of like,
the weather is getting warmer, so it is time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince. Now that I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year, like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
I can confirm this. I'm actually wearing Quince pants right now.
You are.
They are so, they're loose, they're breezy. These babies have a button, a fly, drawstring, and elastic in the band. So I can like I can dress them up. I can dress them down.
Yes.
They're the perfect pant for summer, and I'm really comfortable as hell in them.
Honestly, I am wearing the Quince 14 karat gold earring loop right now.
Oh, my God.
I know. I think it's so cute. It does not tarnish. It is so comfy, and I have sensitive ears, so I'm really loving this for my body. So get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/Kelsey for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Kelsey to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/Kelsey.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It's given you the strength of who you can be today and balancing that and making sure that it doesn't propel you into ignorance, I guess, right?
Like,
it's complex. It really is. And I guess, like, winding down, because I know I've kept you over time.
No.
Like, coming back, right? Like, you're out of rehab now. I drank the day I got out of rehab because I was like, I'm not here for alcohol. I'm here for mental health. I don't have a drinking problem. Like, I was not okay coming out of rehab. And I always say, like, the one that I went to, like, was that foo-foo Malibu Hills, like, bullshit that I was like, I was getting massages. We had, like, a personal chef. I was on vacation. I did not go to, like, fucking rehab. But I did learn, like, some tools and, like, blah, blah, blah. Got new medication, yada, yada. But I guess, like, someone could look at your situation, right? And be like, okay, now she has to go on, like, the apology tour. Or now, like, she's been canceled and now she's uncanceling herself. Like, you know, I'm thinking all the headlines that people want to write. But I think only you know your intention and, like, your purpose for stepping back into a space of business, of making public statements again, to making... Yeah. You know, to doing meetings, doing podcasts, whatever. So I guess, like, how do you bounce back? Like, how do you come back? How do you fucking do this?
I mean, I have no fucking idea. Like, I actually, you're the first person that I've ever met who has also gone to rehab. Like,
oh, hey.
I don't know. And I mean, I think that, like, so, you know, when I hit my 4-week mark in rehab, like, I got, like, agoraphobic, where I was like, I'm not leaving. Like, yeah. I don't, like, I was terrified of the world. I was like, I
Safe
was convinced,
space,
like,
yeah.
My family hates me. Everyone hates me. You know, I was so hurt by, like, honestly, like, some of my former team members, knowing, like, I feel like I hurt them. And so then I was blaming myself. But then I was also so upset that, like, people that I expected to reach up didn't.
No one was on your side.
No, like, it was just sort of this. And the people who were then also publicly, like, you know, not.
And, so, and there's not even a side. It's just about being like, there were flawed human beings.
I know. And I honestly was like, well, I'm not leaving. Like, I remember crying. And, like, I remember the third week I was there, my therapist and the discharge planner, like, planning for how you leave. And I just would break down. I'm like, I can't have full panic attack. Like, I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave. This is a safe bubble. Yep. I do not want to leave here. And it took a lot, and it took, like, a couple more weeks to get me to a place of, like, okay, I'm leaving.
Okay, I have to go back to the real world.
And I was so scared. I was, like, terrified. Like, you know, I'm still kind of building back, like, talking to my family, because I think I feel a lot of responsibility and guilt for, like, also what they went through with this. Like, you know, people did reach out to them. People did then try to come after them. Like, my sisters are also, like, influencers. Like, it just became this whole sort of, I was terrified. And I didn't make posts on social media, like, for months. And then I'm now kind of going back, and I haven't gotten sort of that negative, but, like, it is a daily thing that I wake up every day, or I check social media, and, like, my anxiety is so high. Cause, like, even though I do think that all of the things that were brought up are completely valid and I need to be held accountable for, being, like, a 22-year-old who, like, has a, social media, the effects of social media in general, is terrifying, right? Like my sister called me, my sister called me today and she was like, you're posting too much stuff about periods. And I was like, oh, but I'm passionate about it. Like I'm just passionate about periods. Yeah. And she's like, it's too much. Like you're going to get canceled. And I was like, it's like, you know, it's a constant new fear. Yeah. And so I don't, but all this to say, I don't know how to come back. And I'm actually I don't view it as like, I was canceled and I was not. I was held accountable for things that I really need to do self-work on and learning. And I am not done with that. I just started it. I'm continuing going on. And like, I'm still working with these accountability coaches. I have multiple therapists still, and I have an executive coach who I like live by. And like, it's kind of like, I feel like I don't see it as like, oh, I'm going to uncancel. Like I'm going to go be the girl boss. I actually think like, I don't really think I have this, I don't have this inspiration anymore of like, oh, I'm at the top. But I am kind of in this place of like, I want to talk about this, you know, like since I've gotten back, so many younger girls on my following are like, I'm so depressed in quarantine. I don't want to tell anyone. Right. Or people who do want to still talk about periods who are just learning about it. And I'm like, yeah, let's fucking come together.
I feel the way, like, not comparing you to like Lena Dunham. Right. But I remember having this like internal struggle being like, she's such an advocate for chronic pain and like endometriosis specifically. And like, we need that celebrity to talk about it to make change, unfortunately. And like, it sucks that it had to be like someone that I think anyone could quickly label like a shitty white woman and someone who like denies, you know, survivors' stories. And it's like, I had that internal struggle of like, can someone be an advocate that I trust and be a flawed human being that's not perfect, that not everyone is going to like? And, you know, do I share my opinions about that person or like stand up for them or support them or donate to them or whatever? Like, how do you, I guess, kind of reckon with that, right? Because I think maybe some like Black women could say, well, like, we don't trust her. Like, we don't want to do whatever work she's doing. So how do you manage like your own amends, I guess? Is that a loaded question?
I mean, so no. I mean, and these are important questions I've been obsessing over, right? And that's part of like starting in June in working with these accountability coaches, like, and that's, I'm just gonna call it that. Like they did a lot of sort of work with me on, and I'm still on the road of making amends, right? Like there are people that I want to make amends for, like literally for like friends that I was not a great friend because work for me has always come over everything. Right, I was not a great sister. I was not a great daughter. Like, I think that for me, I am still very much on that road, but a lot of it was learning about like, what does it look like to do sort of reckoning within yourself and make sure you get to a place where like you're ready to go make amends and it's really authentic, right? Because that was my thing with the whole, like, I know we call it like apology to our community. Yeah. I still am working up to that space where like, I know I'm going to go into those conversations and mean everything I say and understand the harm that I caused. Right. And so I'm still on that. And like, again, I'm not at a place where like, I expect people to trust me. Like I'm going into every conversation being like, I need to earn respect and trust. Like, I think another thing is like, as I am making the conscious decision to get back into work, right? Yeah. Like, and mostly because like, I don't have the luxury to not work, you know, but like, I think that for me, I already feel that I'm doing it a different way of like, I am surrounding people in like horizontal share of power. And like, I'm bringing in people who like, who are actually some of the people who call me out or call me in on social media are now team members of mine.
Wow. Right?
And like, so I kind of went at it from a, like, I genuinely want to learn from you.
Yeah.
And I want to do this with you. And like, let's talk about this. Right. And so again, still on the journey.
Yeah,
still work in progress.
Well, no, I think like, that's why, you know, when we started this conversation, I was like, damn, she's got balls to like be able to like talk about this shit, right? Because I think it can feel so, at the end of the day, so fucking embarrassing. And someone with any sort of anxiety or depression or panic disorder, like our greatest fear is being embarrassed in front of people and like to be called out on like a social media stage or whatever. Like just acknowledging the shame, right? Acknowledging the self-shame, acknowledging the public shame, and you know, what's the difference between what is it, shame and what's the other one? What is it? Guilt. Right. Yeah. And it's like recognizing that like I might feel guilty about something, but just like you said, it's when the conversations need to be had, it's because you're going to mean it. And it's because you're going to have started doing the work that is continuous and never ending and acknowledging it. And like, thank you again for being that and just showing that there's like another side to it. Because I think it's really easy to come back and be like, I'm cured, I'm fixed, I fucked up, I was problematic, and now I'm not. Because look, I struggled. And it's like, no, I appreciate the in-between. Like, I appreciate the gray area, and I just appreciate what you're doing. So like, I'm not going to be like, what's next for you? The way I ask like every like guest that comes on here, but maybe just like, how are you now? How do you feel? how are you today?
I mean, I'll say it completely varies. So I grew up with my mom. My mom was never like about antibiotics all the time, like was very careful about that. And so I had never tried mental health like meds until rehab. And I feel like miles better, mostly because I've been an extreme insomniac my whole life.
Yeah.
Basically. And now I have a sleeping pill that I should probably not lean so heavily on that like puts me out. And
but you got to get sleep. Get your sleep.
I know. I got to get sleep.
Yeah.
So, and I want to be careful of like, I'm not advocating for meds, but I'm saying it has been life-changing for me, like having antidepressants, having like, taking it very careful, but with certain ones that will just calm my panic attack down. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing a lot better. I will say that like, I'm trying to graduate school. Ooh. Like that's something I need to do. I'm in senior right now. God. And like, I have been kind of just really excited about building out this kind of just in a completely new space of, you know, wanting to expand on my work with gender equality. And as I said, like in a different way. So I'm feeling good and crocheting a lot.
Fuck yeah. I got super into knitting when I, it's soothing. Listen, I have a whole chapter in my book about knitting, which I can't wait to send to you, by the way, because I think it's going to be like, I can't wait to see our books together on a shelf, like pink explosion.
I love it.
Well, thank you again so much. I mean, this is such like just the tip of the iceberg of a conversation that like a larger conversation that could be had. But I appreciate you for going as deep as you have and only wish you the best. And I'm just like glad we finally met.
Me too. Thank you so much.
So seriously. do you want to plug anything? Do you want to like tell people what the fuck?
I guess all I'll say is like, I really, really appreciate when other people like share with me what they got out of, you know, hearing my story or wanting to talk. And like, I spend so much time like interacting with strangers on social media because like, I do know a lot of the shit I'm talking about is unfortunately very common, right? Like the amount of, especially women who've gone through similar things is awful. Yeah. And that experience can feel so isolating. And so like, I think I would just want to say like, I'm sending love to everyone and like, hit me up. Like my social media handles are my name. And so,
The kids know how to find us. I'm always like, this is pointless putting social media handles in the fucking description. Cause you're just going to figure it out.
I know. But I'll just say that. And I'm excited for the future for sure.
Oh, well, thanks, Nadia. I will send out the same good vibes to all the confidants for this week. And also, Period Power is such a powerful book, no pun intended. And it's very cute for a coffee table book, like if you just also need decor. Okay, confidants, have a great week. I'll see you next week. Bye.